You're listening to the Feel Good Weddings podcast, a podcast by Polka Dot Wedding. My name is Dorothy and I'm the founder and editor, and I am passionate about wedding stories. But when it came to coming up with a podcast subject, we knew we wanted to dive in a little bit deeper. We knew there were subjects and thoughts and discussions that we haven't really been having that we wanted to have. We knew there were people we were talking to that maybe we needed to talk to in front of you so you could learn and get to know them as much as we did. We knew that there was room for something that was perhaps diving a little bit deeper while still having plenty of fun. And that's exactly what we want to do with this podcast. We can't wait to get to know you. The Polka Dot Wedding team is honoured to conduct our work on the land of the Boon Wurrung, Woiwurrung, Wurrung, Eora and Kurungi people. We honour the traditional Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander custodians of the land, and we pay our respects to elders past and present. One of my favourite parts about Polka Dot Wedding is Polka Dot You. We launched it a couple of years ago as Polka Dot Weddings, and it's always been the place for, well, you. You get to come on as a newlywed or newly engaged or even as a honeymooner and share your story your way. You get to decide what photos you use. You get to decide what text you use. It's not us sitting there curating it. It's you. So today I'm really excited to welcome one of our You writers, Ava. Ava married her beloved Ash last year in a four-day Hindu extravaganza in Sydney. And while the wedding was steeped in tradition, what it also was steeped in how Ash and Ava wanted to plan their day and how Ash and Ava wanted to celebrate. And I feel like that's really difficult to do sometimes when family and society pressures are so heavy. So today I'm really thrilled to welcome Ava and share all her wonderful advice with you. Hello, Ava. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I've been trying to plan it for a while, but it's finally here. And I think, yeah, it'll be a nice little discussion. So thanks for having me.
I'm really excited about our chat because we had so much fun sharing your wedding on polka.u. And it was just such a feast for the eyes and feast for the senses. So I think it's going to be really fun to dive a little bit more into it. I would love to start with how you and Ash met, because you met randomly in Canberra at a museum. And from what you told us, you then pursued Ash to find him. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, I actually feel like the whole experience of me seeing him and then finding him on social media was probably like really weird for him because it was, yeah, it's like major stalker vibes, I know. But so prior to Facebook, actually, there was a social media platform known as Bebo. And like, this is probably giving away my age now, but I think we had some friends in common on Bebo, and it just suggested that I add him as a friend. So I did. But mind you, at this time, I didn't know it was the same guy from the museum. So anyways, after he accepted, I went through his page, and then I figured out he was actually the guy from the museum, because like he had, you know, this really cool hair at the time that everyone was kind of doing. And I noticed that it was the same car that he was in, and he had that as his profile picture. Anyways, super weird and stalkerish, I know, but that's how we kind of got talking. And then eventually, like, I think it was only a couple of weeks after we met for our first ever cinema date. And I think we watched Aliens in the Attic, and you know, it was kind of cute for me. Like, I felt like it was a real first date because, mind you, as a teenager, you know, who grew up watching One Tree Hill, things like Clueless, things like A Cinderella Story, it was like a tick in my book, you know, popcorn, chocolate ice cream, and just good old teen spirit. It was a really good first date. And after that, you know, we kept up the talking and the phone calls and mall dates. And then I think we eventually became a couple after I had just turned 16. And I think the way that I remember it is because I had a party and he was obviously invited. But at the time, like, my mum didn't know that we were dating, because growing up, my mum was a little strict. She was like, oh, you know, you can have a boyfriend when you finish high school and get to uni and all that. So anyways, I didn't tell her, but he had bought me as a present, he actually bought me a Tiffany necklace because I had wanted it for so long. And yeah, it was so nice. I feel like it kind of became a legacy, because that was the first Tiffany he ever gave me, the necklace. And then he actually proposed with a Tiffany ring as well, which was kind of nice. So, yeah.
Oh, So I feel like when you first told your story, I was like, how did you even find him? But if you had mutual friends, it sounds like it was a little bit meant to be anyway. So, you know, maybe was it completely stalkerish?
That's right. I mean, that's what I like to tell myself because I think, yeah, I think like it sounds super like stalkerish and I completely get it. But I think we did.
No, you just had mutual friends and you connected. It's completely different.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm going to tell. Exactly. I'm going to tell people now and, you know, I'll just be like, look, it was mutual friends. Like, yes, I see
him, yeah.
But we eventually found each other on social media, so it's fine. It's nothing to... No, right.
Exactly. Now, you brought up your proposal, which sounded like it was the proposal of your dreams, which happened on New Year's Eve. Can you tell us how Ash proposed? Or maybe you proposed. I know Ash proposed, but, you know, we're being equal these days.
Oh, that's right. So it was actually New Year's Day. So Ash is just a big nature lover. Like, he loves all things nature, loves being by the beach, loves the water. And so we always had this tradition of going to a beach on New Year's Day, just like every year we'd do it. It was something that was, you know, meaningful to us. It was just us two. It was kind of nice. And so
it's romantic.
It is very romantic. And the proposal was just that, like, it was so sweet and intimate because it was just the two of us. And it was something that I had always wanted and envisioned. Like, I wasn't the type of person that wanted like that grand proposal in front of a lot of people. I mean, that's nice. And honestly, it's a personal choice for like whoever wants the grand proposal. Like, that's completely up to them. But for me, I think the intimacy and the closeness made it really more magical for me.
Yeah.
But he had told my family and his family before proposing on that day that he was actually going to do it. And I think they were kind of like, well, it's about time, because by that time we had been together for 10 years and, you know, we weren't getting any younger. So I think a lot of people had seen it coming. But, yeah, it was just us two, which was really nice. And it was something that I had communicated to him, just like, you know, when you randomly talk about, oh, you know, how would you'd like to be proposed to, or what would happen when we get married. Like, it was just something that I had mentioned in passing, and for him to like remember it and actually do it the way that I had wanted was, yeah, very sweet, very nice.
And to be honest, it sounds completely opposite to your wedding, which was a 4-day extravaganza. Do you want to tell us a little bit about like the basics of your wedding day? So where was it? When was it? I think you said it went for 4 days, didn't you? What are the sort of stats of your weddings? How many people did you invite? All that kind of thing.
Yeah. So we had a traditional Indian wedding. So our ceremony was a Hindu ceremony, but it went for, I think 4 days. You're right, 4 days. And so I'll start with perhaps the first day. So we had our henna ceremony, and traditionally that's only done kind of with like the ladies and the women of the family, and it's not really done together, so you don't really do it as a joint bride and groom thing. But I, you know, we like to challenge the norm a little bit, so I was like, no, I want it together. Because it was something that I had wanted to do. I wanted to get nice pictures of us together while I was getting my henna done. And so that was the first day. And that was during the daytime as well. And that was something that was probably important to us as well. Like, as you would have seen from, you know, the wedding photos and the little article that we had beforehand, we opted to do a lot of things a little differently. Like, traditionally you don't have Indian weddings during the day and it's not really outside, so we tried to change that, because we're like, we wanted it to be like a really warm kind of inviting feel. We didn't want it to be static, and we didn't want it to feel like, we just wanted people to have fun. We didn't want it to be boring. Kind of wanted to put a little bit of, you know, our Western like upbringing, because we're, you know, we grew up here, we went to school here, we went to uni here, we work here, so we also wanted to have like the traditional cultural roots, but add in like the Western flair to make it a little bit more personal to us. So, I think that's how we did it. In terms of the pre-wedding events, I think the ones at my house were probably at like between 50 to 70 people I had at home.
Yes.
And then Ash's family is a little bit bigger, and so he had a lot more people. I think off the top of my head, he might have had like close to 100 or 150 every day, like for the pre-wedding events, which, you know, is is kind of a lot. Like for me, I had already communicated to my family and my mom that I wanted it to be, you know, just really personal for me. Like I didn't want a lot of like random people there. And by random, I mean like, you know, like an auntie of an auntie or like a cousin, yeah, cousin, yeah, of a cousin. Like I actually wanted people there who I had spoken to, who knew me and who I had some type of relationship with. So it was a little different for both of us. But yeah, for the pre-wedding events, I would say for mine, it was about 70. For Ash's, it was a bit more. But then at the wedding day, we had 220 people at the wedding, which, believe it or not, is actually quite conservative for an ethnic Indian wedding.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure if, I mean, you might not be familiar with it, but traditionally, like I've been to weddings, my cousin's weddings and friends where there's been like 400 people or 500 people. And it's been crazy. Like I think the main thing for me was that I didn't want to feel like I was overwhelmed. Like I didn't want it to be a experience because, you know, it's like it's the most important day of your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just don't want that added stress. So I think we got really lucky because, we had 220. It was manageable and it was even.
Did you get pushback from your families around that?
We did a little bit because sometimes I think in the heat of wedding planning, like obviously, like, you know, your family and your parents, they want to be able to invite their friends and their family members that they know of that maybe you don't know that much, but still people that are important to them or people that have, you know, meaning for them in their life as well. So I think we did get a little bit of pushback, but because it was still kind of in the COVID or pandemic time, we got a little lucky because the venue that we had chosen, that was the, I think that was the max that they could do.
Yeah.
So we were really lucky. Like given that we did go right up to the max, we did get really lucky because it was something that, you know, 220 was manageable. It was like 110, yeah, like 100, 110 each side, which is like when you think about it, it's not that much because – like I have a lot of friends. We have a lot of family.
Yeah. So you have your 2 days. You have your henna ceremony and then you have the turmeric ceremony, which is called the haldi ceremony, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So we had the henna ceremony and that was at my house and that was during the day. So we had like a lot of dancing, cake cutting and then obviously henna as well. And so actually for all of my pre-wedding events, quick shout out to my mum, but we actually styled and set up the flowers and decor for the home events ourselves because my mum and I, like, we love flowers and plants and everything. So we actually did it ourselves. So we had like a lot of magnolia and maple leaves and stuff like that, which was really nice. And it kind of went with our theme.
Yeah.
And then, so that was the henna day. And then on the 30th of April and the 1st of May, we had our turmeric ceremony, which is the haldi. So there's a long-held belief that it actually blesses the wedded couple, but turmeric is also really good for the skin, like for glowing skin. So I was like, this is a win-win because I had like zero sleep. I was surviving on zero sleep because I was like, you know, sometimes the rituals and just like just having fun, like being part of it would go so late into the night and then it would be like, you know, a reasonably early start the next day and just like the excitement. So I wasn't getting a lot of sleep, but because of the turmeric ceremony and everything, I felt like my skin, like it actually behaved. It felt nice.
You were glowing.
Yeah, I was glowing. I did look a little yellow, to be honest. I think they were.
Because that's, of course, the problem with turmeric, isn't it? Is it stains? Does it stain your skin as well, though?
It does because I remember when I was, when I would like finish for the day and like change into my pajamas, getting ready for bed, I had like purple or lilac pajamas and they came out like yellow.
And it doesn't come out of clothes at all either. So, oh my gosh.
Like really like scrub wash. And then same thing with my shoes, like my wedding day shoes. I had beautiful Jimmy Choo heels and they were white. And because they put it like everywhere, so they put the Haldi everywhere, all over your body, on your feet. And so when I had put it on, like my white shoes were stained, like the inside of it was stained. So my mum actually, she left it out in the sun for a week, and then it just, yeah, it went away, which was kind of nice. So.
Oh, bless mum. Thanks, mum.
That's right.
They always know how to fix it. Oh. So when you, like, the four-day celebration is such an enormous thing to plan, and most of, you know, couples are stressing out with one day. So where do you even start with a four-day celebration in planning it? Like, did you start with your vibe, what you wanted it to feel like, or did you start with vendors? How did you sort of begin it?
I would say for the pre-wedding events that we had, I know for both sides, so for my side and for Ash's side as well, we were really lucky because we had a lot of help and support from our parents. Like,
yeah.
I pretty much left like the catering for the pre-wedding events and just how the day would run, and like, because we had like a bit of entertainment on those pre-wedding events too. I kind of left that to my mum. Like, we planned it together, but she was more in charge for the pre-wedding stuff. So she, you know, she had a lot of contacts that she knew of for the catering, and we had like one of my cousins had recently got married before me, I think like 6-7 months before. So the people that they had kind of used for the catering and everything else, it was just like, it was kind of like a sharing circle. Like, it was,
oh,
you know, so my cousin or my auntie would pass that information on to my mom, and like, I think that's kind of how it works. Because when I have been to Indian weddings for like my cousins or my friends, it really is word of mouth. Like, if someone is really a really good vendor, like, you know, you enjoyed the food somewhere or you enjoyed like a performer somewhere, it's really like, hey, like, can you let me know, or can you give me the number to contact this person? Like, you just ask.
I think
that helped a lot, because that's how we got to planning it. But I do think the first thing that we probably decided was our outfits. And then everything kind of flowed from there, because the outfits that we had, we obviously situated our decor and styling and flowers around those colors. So I think the starting point was like planning what I wanted to wear and planning what Ash wanted to wear. And then going from there in terms of, you know, how would you like what do you want it to feel like? What do you want it to look like? And then seeing what kind of elements you can kind of add to it to make
that
come to fruition, if that makes sense.
But
definitely a big part of it was the help that we had from our family members in planning the pre-wedding events, because, like, you know, organizing, because for some of them, the priest actually comes to the house as well, because the Haldi ceremony, they also put like coconut oil on you as well at the same time.
Wow.
Like, it's actually like, it's like a nourishing thing. Like, it's so that your skin looks really nice as well. So a couple of the things that the priest comes to the house to kind of get it going. So all that, like, I was involved in, but I didn't have a big part because my mum was kind of doing that in the background. And then the other thing would probably be like, so there's this thing which is a big part of an Indian wedding, is the sweet making.
Yes.
So we start like a week or two before, and like, you know, with family members come and they help make lots of like sweets and snacks. So that was, coordinated by my auntie and my mom. And I'm really grateful, because I can imagine, like, if you didn't have the help and support of family, and if you were kind of like go it alone, it's kind of daunting. Like, it's like, well, where do I start? But I think, but I think like having that support was really helpful for people that are doing it alone. I think it really helps to sit down and just make a list of things that you want, because a lot of the pre-wedding events, like, they don't have as much religious significance, if that makes sense. Like, it's like a cultural traditional thing. I think it would make sense to like make a kind of list, and then some people like do it all in the same day. Like, you know I've seen destination weddings where people have done like the henna and the turmeric all in one day, and then they've got them married the next day, and that's completely fine as well. Like, it's completely how you want to do it. So
you said your day started, like, the theme of your day started with your attire,
mm-hmm.
and your attire was incredible, and both you and Ash had your outfits made by the same person. Yep. Can you tell me about those and how you found that design and how you found that process of having all your outfits, because you didn't just have one, did you? You had multiple.
No, I think I had actually I think I had about, well, me personally, I don't know about Ash, because so what happens is after the henna ceremony that we had during the day, we don't see each other till the wedding day. So we have the pre-wedding events at each other's, at our own homes.
Oh, okay.
So we weren't seeing each other and stuff. But I think I had a total of 6 outfits for the whole.
Wow.
For the whole wedding week. I feel like it's kind of conservative because sometimes people do have a lot more. It actually really depends on what you want to do.
If
you want to wear 8 or 10 outfits, that's completely up to you. It's whatever you want to do. But yeah, so it was traditional attire for all the days. So my bridal outfit was what's known as a lehenga. So it's a skirt and a top, and it's got a little veil as well. And so when we were planning that, I think when we started wedding planning, it was March, April, 2020, that was actually the first thing we did. Cause I said to Ash, it's like COVID is here and it's happening. And if we don't do it right now, we're not going to have any outfits to wear for our wedding because everything was completely customized. So it wasn't even made here. Our outfitter actually got it made from, their suppliers and their people in India.
Yeah.
So everything that we did, I had a certain vision in mind. I had seen something that I liked. And then I literally just showed them the photo and I was like, I want something like this. And, I tried something similar, but I knew what I wanted. I knew the material. I knew the colors. And then we kind of designed it around that.
Yeah.
And then Ash's wedding day outfit was actually more customized than mine. His matched mine in terms of he had the turban that was the same color and he also wears a little throw over / shawl, I would say. But he had some really nice customized work on it too. So he had a really large rose on the back of his the top half. And that was in honor of his late mom, which was really sweet. And that was all hand embroidered as well. So it was it was massive. It was, I don't know, I think 40 or 50 centimeters. So it was quite big and prominent. Yeah. And then he also had our names embroidered on the wrist, on the sleeves of his outfit, which was really nice too. So it was all this work that went into it. But I think that really set the tone because from everything on our wedding day was situated around the color of our outfits, which, it probably sounds might sound weird to some people, but yeah, all our flowers, all our even the wedding program, even the place cards that we had, everything was around the colors of what we were wearing, which, I think it kind of just brings everything together in a nice way. It's a nice cherry on top. So yeah, everything started off with the outfit and we were really lucky that we did it at the time we did because there are, if we hadn't put in our order and if we hadn't done it, I think we did it. We ordered it in May, July, probably July 2020. But if we didn't do it at that time, I don't think it would have come in time for our wedding because there was really big delays because obviously COVID in India was really bad. They had shut down a lot of things. People weren't working. People were really sick. And so production was slow. Shipping was slow. It wasn't a great time, so.
Planning a wedding in the time of COVID, I think it's just you've got to allow so much more time, don't you?
Yeah.
One of the things I loved most about how you and Ash planned your day was that you added all these special touches, you honoured Ash's mother who sadly passed away in a couple of different ways. You did a whole lot of DIY. Can you tell me about those special touches that you added to your day?
Yeah. So I think you're right. We had the little touches such as Ash's, the rose for his mum on his outfit.
Yeah.
And then we also had a picture of her framed. And then we had a little saying that was framed as well, next to her picture. And we placed it was actually my mum actually found it. She was at a random boutique shop, but it's a little vase and it's in the shape of a moon. And so every time she'd say to Ash, love you to the moon and back.
Oh.
And so it was so sweet because I was you know, it's in the shape of the moon. And then I wrote on there, like, to the moon and back. And that actually became our wedding hashtag, like our couple hashtag.
Oh, I loved it.
But it's funny because so our surname, Chand, actually means like moon in Sanskrit, which is like the language. So it was
so special.
Yeah, it was. I was like, oh, this is crazy. And I was thinking for so long, like, what, you know, I really wanted a wedding hashtag. I was like, what is it going to be? What is it going to be? And I was like, oh, hang on, I know. But yeah, so we had that. I did DIY a couple of things. So our wedding favors, we had little succulents in pots, which, yeah, I DIY'd because I had a lot of those succulents, like my mum's garden. And then I just got little terracotta pots that we put it in, which was nice. And, you know, it's something that people can take home. I actually have a friend. He came from Melbourne to our wedding and he still has that succulent and it's still alive. And
oh, like, thank you.
He's like, I can't believe it's still alive. He's like, I don't know how to take care of plants, but it's still going strong. And like that just, it's so nice when people can say,
yeah,
because it's something that, you know, is meaningful and that they can remember. So I thought that was really nice. And then I think, yeah, so we had that. And then one of my, so my sister-in-law actually made our welcome sign. And she's amazing. Like she has the best like handwriting and she was really good with the colors and what we wanted. So she made our welcome sign. And then I also opted for having e-invites and we used Zola. And that was really good because traditionally for Indian weddings, you print it out and you send it out. And sometimes they actually like get it made overseas as well. So you'd place in an order and then it comes over and then you send it out. But we opted for e-invites, you know, something for the planet. which was nice. And yeah, I actually made our wedding program booklet on Canva. And then I got one of my friends, her dad works in printing and he just printed it out for us. And that was really good because Canva's great. Like if you know how to use it and you can navigate it, it was really good because, yeah, I made our place cards and our wedding program booklet through there.
I loved all of those touches. And now you mentioned some of the vendors in there, like as in Zola and the services you used. Mm-hmm. And you and Ash were married all in one venue in the beautiful Dalton House. Mm. Can you tell me about your dream team and which were your standout vendors and who did you love working with?
I would say all of our vendors were like really great, like from the venue, the entertainment, our outfitters, you know, the florist, our DJ, photographer, videographer team. They were all really good. They were all really accommodating because, mind you, like you said, planning a wedding during COVID and just, you know, having those assurances, like, yeah, stress, but also like having assurances in place that for whatever reason that, you know, it can't go ahead or it's postponed, just knowing that those people will be able to like accommodate. Like we really had to make sure that that was something that they were able to do because, you know, it was kind of front and center for us that if something happened or if there was another restriction or another outbreak, like we may not be able to go ahead with our day or like we might need to cull our numbers. So that was something that we kind of had to deal with in the background. And like weddings are stressful to plan as it is, but just having that looming over you, that was another thing altogether. But I would say the standout vendors, I would probably say like our wedding outfitters, they were really, really good.
Yep.
Because they were the first people that we approached when wedding plannings because, you know, we chose our outfits first. And we actually also got both our outfits, my henna day outfit was also from the same vendor as well as Ash's wedding party outfit, so his groomsman, his dad's outfit was also from them, and then a couple of my family members also bought outfits from them as well. So
wow, they did well out of your wedding.
That's right. That's what I mean. Like I think it was good because they were really accommodating, and everywhere else that we had kind of gone at that time, they were honest with us, which was nice, saying that, you know, it won't be done before the wedding or it might be tight. And for some reason, like these people were like, no, 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 like, you know, just leave it to us. It'll be fine. And they actually delivered on what they said they would, which was really nice. So I think that really set the tone for our wedding and it kind of brought everything all together because like I said, everything started from, you know, choosing our outfit and colors and choosing what we wanted it to look and feel like. So I think they were probably a really standout vendor. And I, like, we've bought from them before, like, you know, when we've gone to other weddings or just bought outfits from them, and they've always been amazing. So I think, yeah, I think they were probably a real standout vendor as well.
And you had Eden and Belle did your flowers. So they did they do flowers for all the 4 days or just your reception and ceremony day?
It was just our ceremony and reception day that we had. Yeah, they were really good as well. They were, you know, super accommodating. The lady who, so the owner of Eden and Belle, Sophie, her husband actually built our mandap, which is like the four.
Wow.
Yep. The four post structure that you sit under to get married, which is probably the most important, like, physical element of the ceremony. He built it for us because, you know, I wanted it to feel really like organic and earthy and luxe and really floral. And so I opted like for a wooden mandap. I really wanted it to feel just very like, yeah, just very natural, but like also, like I said, just really floral and like enchanted garden kind of vibe. So yeah, he actually built it for us. And to be honest, like we had inquired with a lot of other places, but they weren't just able to accommodate. And yeah, our Eden and Belle were really great because they were able to do that. And then the styling and like the flowers at our wedding were amazing. And, you know,
they were
sit under the canopy. And it was so nice. It was so refreshing. It smelt amazing. And yeah, I loved it.
One of the things you said earlier, which I loved, was that you wanted to challenge the norm when it came to Hindu weddings. Mm-hmm. So how did you do that with your ceremony? Because I know a Hindu ceremony is, well, and the 4 days before it is very full of tradition and the things that you are expected to do. So what did you do in your actual ceremony on the wedding day that was personal to you both?
So I think we actually stuck with most of like the religious significance of the Hindu ceremony kept because, you know, we're not the most religious people in the world, but we knew that it meant a lot to our families and our parents, and we, you know, wanted them to kind of have that and be happy and kind of feel like they were involved. So we did stick with majority of the religious steps with the guidance of the priests on the day. But in saying that, we did have little touches that we added along the way that kind of, you know, made it a bit more personal to Ash and I. So for example, it's quite traditional for Indian grooms to arrive at their weddings on a white horse. But Ash actually opted for a white Cadillac.
Same thing.
That's right. He just added in some contemporary 21st century vibes, which was nice. And then the other thing, which I think I briefly touched on as well, was our ceremony took place outside and it was actually during the day or afternoon. So it was just on the wharf, like on the gantry overlooking the wharf, sorry. And traditionally they're done inside. So inside a hall or any type of like enclosed area, and usually more towards the evening time. So I think that was something that was like a little twist that we had because I was like, I'm not like, it was such a beautiful day and it's beautiful weather. I was like, I'm not going to give up the opportunity to have really nice, vibrant photos. So we decided to opt for the daytime ceremony. And I think the other thing I would say is that traditionally, the bride walks down the aisle alone, but I actually had my mum walk me down the aisle, which is, you know, it's kind of unheard of. And I think the reason why is because she's also a single mum. So I think that's even more unheard of because there's just, there's really like a really outdated kind of misogynist view that, you know, if you're a single mom or a single dad that you shouldn't be participating in all of the, you know, religious rituals and other things part of your children's wedding day. But I was like, no, I'm not having it any other way. I want my mom to walk me down the aisle. So that's what we did. And then we also had like little things here and there. Like I had a cellist who played Ellie Goulding as I walked down the aisle, which was really nice. And then the other things that we kind of did was the speeches. We tried to keep it at a minimum, I think, because we, we didn't want our guests to be bored. Like, we really wanted them to feel entertained and feel appreciated that, you know, they were there and that we appreciate them being there and being present. So we kept the speeches to a minimum and then we kind of amped up the performances and entertainment. So I think we had 3 or 4 on the night, and most of them actually involved audience participation, which was so good because it kind of got people out of their shell. Because I don't know, like sometimes Hindu, you know, weddings and receptions, they can be a bit modest, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like it's not as, like it's not like a tradition, like not like a Western
reception. There's more tradition, right. I think, in an Indian wedding. Yeah. So it's a little bit more pulled back, and maybe a little bit more restrained.
Yeah. Yeah, a bit muted, I would say. Like, it would be a bit muted. So I think we tried to change that a little bit just by adding in those little things. Audience participation was really good. Like, I mean, if I could recommend that to anyone, like if your entertainment vendors can do some type of audience participation, then go for it, because it's like it's such an icebreaker. And like, you know, we had Latin dancers. Like,
I was going to say, you didn't just have one entertainment company. You had Dance With Me Sydney, you had Mitch Billick, and you had SK Bollywood. Like, you just went all out on your entertainment.
Yeah, because, you know, we thought, we, like I said, we wanted something different. We didn't want people to feel like they weren't having a good time. Like, we kept our ceremony kept with the traditional religious vibe, with the addition of the little touches that we had that kind of made it personal to us. But then the reception, even though it was vegetarian and alcohol free, like that kept us kind of in sync with the religious side of it. We still wanted it to be just as entertaining and, you know, just as fun that it would be if you were to go to any other type of reception. So I think that was really important to us. We also actually had a surprise performance by Asher's groomsmen and his cousins and family. And that was, I think that was the last like entertainment of the night that kind of opened up the dance floor.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was so good. Like, it was just so, it was jam packed, but it was nice. Like, there wasn't a lull ever. And I think it was really entertaining. Well, I mean, I enjoyed it, so.
That's all that matters, to be honest.
That's right.
Now, let's talk about what it's like planning a Hindu wedding in Sydney in 2021. Did you have any issues with vendors? Did you face any vendors that are like, what are you talking about? I don't know how to do that, or anything like that?
Look, I would say that the Mundup thing is probably, like I said, like we had approached other florists and stylists and kind of asked if they could, you know, build something or if they could hire something similar and then get someone else to kind of, because we were really set on our florist is what I should start with. So we didn't want to, like, there is an option to get to hire it from somewhere else and then get them to decorate it and stuff. But it's just easier if, I guess, one person does all of it, because they know what they're kind of doing and they know how to decorate it and they know, like, you know, how to wedge things in certain places and keep it in place so it doesn't, you know, fall apart and stuff like that. So I think it was difficult in the beginning because we didn't go for the traditional mandap. We went for a wooden one, which is kind of hard to find. Like, not everyone does it. And I think that was one of the issues that I came across, because I was initially going to hire it from someone else and then get another vendor to style it. And then some people that you hire it from, they get kind of weird if you don't use them to also style it. So it was becoming such a headache for me, and I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. And then the other thing, like, we were thinking of at the time, because it was just being like, it was just difficult for me at the time, we were thinking of getting Ash, because he's, you know, he's really good at building and on the tools and stuff. I was just going to ask him to build it and then we could just drop it off there and they would, you know, style it and stuff. But anyways, Eden and Belle were really great, because her husband, Sophie's husband, actually built it for us, so that was really super accommodating. And that's like, that's the first time they've done an Indian wedding, and it was amazing. Like, I couldn't believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I couldn't,
because I was gonna say, I think part of the way that you got through it without much pushback from vendors is it sounds like you chose vendors who had worked on Hindu weddings before. Like, Dalton House has obviously had Hindu weddings before, so they know the different structure to a traditional Western wedding. So is that key. But then you say Aidan Bell hasn't done Indian weddings before. So.
First Indian wedding. And, like, Sophie was great. She was so excited because it was her first, like, you know, cultural Indian wedding, which was really nice. And, yeah, I mean, I would say, like, the other thing would probably be the venue, for example.
Yeah.
It's just important for Indian couples or anyone really that's planning an ethnic wedding to be able to have some flexibility in, like, venue hire times, I would say, is one
thing. Yeah.
And also menus, because most of the time when you're going to an Indian wedding, there'll be Indian food there. And sometimes, like, when you know, book some of the bigger venues or the ones that are quite popular, like, they don't always cater for that type of cuisine or food. But again, it wasn't a big issue for us because we had actually curated and customized our Indian and modern Australian menu. So, you know, we had, like, volavant canapes, we had, like, pasta risotto entrees, and then we had, like, the traditional Indian mains, like, you know, Malay kofta, paneer and naan and saffron rice and all that. And then we had, like, the Western. Oh, it was great. It was so good. And it was actually all catered by Dalton House. So you have the option. There was two things that you could do when you book them out, and I think it was only for certain rooms, but you have the option of having an external caterer. So we had that option, or you could just do the catering through them and they could, like, you know, spruce something up. And so that's what we opted for, because we're like, we've been to weddings there before and we've had their food and they're, you know, it's quite good. So we're like, we'll try and put together something and see how it works. And it was really good. Like, our guests enjoyed the meals. So I think that was a big hit. The other thing I would also say is, and I think this is probably a thing for, like, all weddings, regardless of, you know, Indian or Western, I would say that the number of seats you get for your ceremony is not, like, nearly enough. Like, they only give, I think they only cater for, like, 30 seats in weddings that I have been to. Like, Dalton House was different because we asked really, really nicely and we were able to, like, you know, conjure up extra seating, and they also put up projector screens for those people seated inside so that they could see the ceremony that was happening on the gantry, which was really nice. But I would say that's probably a little barrier because, you know, our ceremonies can go for up to 2 hours. And so if you have, you know, if you have 220 guests and you're only seating for 30 people, like, it's, people are going to get.
And it's making it accessible too, isn't it? Because you don't know which of your guests are, you know, are ill or have a chronic illness that might be invisible or anything like that. So if everyone can sit comfortably, it makes it that much more comfortable.
That's very true. And I think that's probably one of the biggest feedbacks that I have about venues and just trying to make it more accessible for these, you know, different type of cultural weddings and ceremonies. I would say, like, the seating is probably an issue. But again, like, most of the time, if you ask nicely and try and set it up, like, way in advance, it's something that they should be able to cater to, because Dalton House was quite accommodating. Even with our venue hire time, traditionally for any type of, you know, wedding celebration, I think there's a max of, like, 4 or 5 hours venue hire time for most places. But we were really lucky because we kind of told them, we're like, look, you know, our wedding ceremony might go for up to 2 hours, and then we want to get photos, like, as a couple and with our wedding party. And then, you know, we have the reception bits. So, like, we need it for a lot longer than the time that's traditionally given to other type of celebrations.
Yeah.
And so they were quite good because I think we ended up actually booking out the double time slot that would have otherwise gone to another event or another couple. So I think that was really nice. Like, they were very accommodating in that sense.
What do you wish, as someone who's gone through a Hindu wedding, that, and what you and I talked about before we started the podcast, was the lack of representation around Hindu weddings. What do you wish the Australian wedding industry could know or would know about a Hindu wedding, and how to make it easier for Hindu couples, or what you wish?
I would say probably, like, those things that I spoke about just earlier. So I think just having the, you know, the ability to customize certain catering menus to be able to accommodate for Indian meals, or if you can't accommodate for it in-house, then at least having an option to kind of get external caterers as well, I think that would be very helpful. And then I think the other thing as well, the other two things that I spoke about, the venue hire time and the seating ceremony is quite important because, you know, it's not traditional in the sense that, you know, sometimes a Christian or a Catholic wedding, like maybe it's done in under an hour, depending on, you know, what the couple wants. But for Indian weddings, most of the time, like ours is pretty short. Like I think we kind of, I was like to the priest, no, I really want it to be only like an hour, hour and a half. And he's like, all right, we can do an hour and a half, but nothing shorter. So I think like just, yeah, being able to accommodate and just like kind of having that in the back of your mind, or maybe even having like a dedicated like cultural wedding specialist, or just accommodate like educating staff.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, or even like educating staff on, you know, how much a cultural Indian wedding can vary, or any type of ethnic wedding, because it's very different in terms of culture to like a traditional wedding, I would say. So I feel like just having that awareness is important. And then maybe having policies around that awareness, you know, being able to cater to different requests, or even just considering different requests is important too. Like some places that I had looked at for doing our ceremony, for example, you couldn't, like, because a big part of it is lighting the fire and then doing like the rituals when that fire is lit. And a lot of places weren't letting you do it because, you know, it's a fire hazard or whatever the case
exactly
may be. So I think like just having that awareness that, you know, it's such a big market, like Hindu weddings are a big market, and just having that awareness that, you know, if you're able to cater to and able to accommodate these type of cultural weddings, I think that would just make it a bit more inclusive for people trying to plan a Hindu wedding as well. in saying that though, I think there is quite a big market for booking traditional Indian wedding vendors as well. Like you don't always have to go with, like, you know, we opted for Dalton House, but I've been to weddings that have been held at temples, for example, or, you know, other venues that are more popular, more accommodating to Hindu and cultural weddings. So I think there's quite a big market for it now. Most of the time with Hindu weddings, it is, like I said earlier, word of mouth. So word travels really fast. Like if you go to a wedding and you like a vendor, or you like a photographer, or you like the entertainment that was there, like you just ask and, you know, you're kind of given that knowledge and you're kind of passed on to the right person. So I think it is like it's quite a big community and it's growing as well. And then I do think like as much as those things and those ideas of mine will make it more accessible, I do think that if you do go with just, you know, regular vendors that aren't like, you know, that don't specialize in Indian weddings, I feel like if you find the right person and the right vendor, they're actually like, they can be quite accommodating and they can change things around to, you know, try and bring your day more into alignment into what you want. Because that's what I found, like aside from our outfit and our photographer and videographer, all our other vendors, we found through Instagram and Google, to be honest. Like I was like, like, I like this, I like the colors, I like this car. Or Ash was like, yep, this is, you know, like he chose the cars. But like even, you know, where we bought our shoes from, where we found the venue, our chandelier suppliers, etc. Like I think there's a lot of information on social media. And most of the time now when people do post about their wedding, they'll also tag their vendors like in the caption, which is helpful. Because like say you like something, or, you know, you like the way that a couple has done something or added an element into their day, you can just like find it, like go on the Instagram page, or like even reach out to them and find it like that. I feel like it's a very, like when you do talk to people, it's quite inclusive. And there's rarely been an occasion when someone hasn't provided you with, you know, advice or guidance or even just a referral. So I think like nowadays it is a bit more inclusive and accessible.
I feel like we've spent the last hour not only talking through your wedding and immersing myself in your wedding again after reading your beautiful post. But also you've just had so much amazing advice that I think anyone, whether they're having a Western or a Hindu wedding, can take something from. I've taken things from that I haven't even thought of. Do you have any last words of advice for couples planning their big day, whether Hindu, Western, or any other culture?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably, and I feel like everyone probably says this, but just really like stay true to like yourselves as a couple. So if there's something that you both want and you don't compromise on, or like you don't want to compromise on, and you know, you have room for it in the budget because that's also an important thing, then do it. Like by all means do it, because it's like you're not going to get that opportunity again. You know what I mean? Like you just want to make sure that everything that you dreamed of, everything that you kind of imagined for your big day, what's important to you both, like what's at the core of your values, is included in your wedding day. Because at the end of it, like it's a reflection on you as a couple. So if it's, you know, if you want to stay true to your ethos, like if you have different ideas or, you know, something that kind of strays from the norm, like if it's a bit left field and you think, oh, I don't know if it's going to work, or I don't know what people will think, or maybe I'll get pushback from family, just like, just put it out there. Cause like the worst thing people can do and the worst thing family can do is say no. But like, you just do it anyway, because like it's your wedding, it's your day. And I think that's probably the most important advice. Like we obviously try and accommodate to family and, you know, like what they would also want, because it's a big day for your parents as well. Like it's, you know, their children are getting married, so obviously they want to be part of it too. But I think it's important to also remember that it's like your first big decision as a couple. Like it's something that you've planned together, and it kind of sets the tone for not only like your wedding day, but your marriage, which is the bigger picture. Like you want your marriage to also be a reflection of, you know, how you were able to plan your wedding, how you were able to pull everything together, how you work as a team, because I feel like that's what it's all about.
I feel like you lived and breathed that through every part of your day, with every little special personal touch you did, and doing it all your way. And I'm really thrilled we got the chance to talk. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That was really good. I'm so glad I got to do it too. And I hope like someone gets some type of inspiration, or, you know, if they're like doubting something, or if they don't have, you know, the confidence to change something about their wedding that they've always wanted to change or are not sure on, then I hope like they're able to do it based on what we spoke about today.
I think there is no doubt that your words will be golden to so many couples. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you'd like to see more of Ava's wedding, you can head on over to polkadotwedding.com/podcast. Over there, we have a full transcript of today's episode, along with all the links from Ava's wedding. You'll even see her full feature with all the photos and all the vendor credits. If you'd like to share your own story, click on over to polkadotwedding.com and click make a submission. We'd love to hear from you. We're a brand new podcast, so we really love any subscriptions, ratings, cheers, confetti, bubbles drinking with us. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. We're always open to feedback, and we can't wait to show you what's next.